Which Way LA is made possible in part by the Ralph M. Parsons Foundation, the Nathan Cummings Foundation, the Rosalind and Arthur Gilbert Foundation, and the John Randolph Haynes and Dora Haynes Foundation, which supports study and research into policy issues of the Los Angeles region.
The Sacramento Sausage Machine grinds into action. Hello again, I'm Armin Alney, and this is Which Way L.A., KCRW's ongoing series on the issues Southern Californians care about. The state Senate today took Mayor Villaraigosa halfway to partial control of Los Angeles schools, but he still needs the assembly. Meantime, lawmakers have 500 more bills to consider between now and adjournment on Thursday. Some of them could be really important. Tonight, we'll look at how chaos becomes business as usual at the end of a session and how bills passed by several committees are completely transformed but still get votes from legislators who've never read them. First, here's the news. Armin Alney back with Which Way L.A. on KCRW. A lot of Democrats who had reservations held their noses today as the state Senate passed Mayor Villaraigosa's proposal for partial takeover of L.A. schools. Next up is the Assembly, which is likely to go along, too. But that's just part of the madness that reigns in the last week of this legislative session, with 500 bills to be acted on between now and adjournment on Thursday. Brian Joseph co-authored a story headlined Crunch Time at the Capitol in the Orange County Register. Brian, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
How does this crunch time come about?
It's due in part to the fact that the legislature likes to move slow during most part of the year. I mean, they like to handle things at a very leisurely pace during April, May, June, and July. And when the deadline comes around, I mean, this is when the rubber meets the road and when they actually have to, you know, worry about passing their bills.
And this, of course, is an election year. All the members of the Assembly and half the Senate are up for either their seats become empty or they're up for re-election. How much does that exacerbate the problem?
Well, you know, this time of the year, you're hearing a lot of complaints about colleagues playing politics with another member's bill. Just got done talking with one legislator who was saying that a couple of her bills were held in committee simply because she was up for election in a very contentious Senate district. That has a real tendency to lengthen out the debates and make the some bills that you might argue are pretty good end up dying simply because a party in charge doesn't want a member to have a success to put on the record in November.
500 bills is a lot of bills. Is there any way to describe the range of bills that are facing the legislature?
It's amazing the kinds of legislation that the lawmakers put forth these days. There's a bill that was passed today that had to do with allocating funds to the protection of sea otters. There is obviously the LA Unified School Bill is a big topic today. You know, other things that are being talked about is as wide and as ranging from the sale of ultrasound machines to things like smoking in cars. It is really anything that you can imagine. There's probably a bill about it.
And using your cell phone with using one of your hands to hold your cell phone in your car. That's another one, right?
That is correct, yes. That is another bill as well. It would require that you have to use a headset, a Bluetooth technology, or an earpiece while you're driving rather than put the phone to your ear with one hand.
They're talking about universal health care, and they're also talking about how long you can tether your dog.
That's correct, yes. For the length of time you can keep your dog chained up outside your home. Attended a press conference about that not too long ago. They showed up with several different examples of the kinds of tethers used for dogs. So that's maybe a more of a lighthearted bill, but one that is getting a lot of attention.
Is there a lobbyist or a core of lobbyists behind every one of these bills?
You know, I'd hate to say that in journalism, you hate to talk in those sort of terms, but I would say that there's a large number maybe it would be fair to say the most bills have lobbyists behind them. Every once in a while, though, you see a bill that comes up that is simply the passion of the lawmaker. But I do believe that is rather rare.
Again, Brian Joseph writes for the Orange County Register. He's Capitol correspondent. We'll come back to him in a moment. First, we go to Frank Russo. He's publisher of CaliforniaProgressReport.com. He worked in the Capitol in the 70s and 80s, and he's been chair of the Alameda County Democratic Party. Frank Russo, good to have you with us.
Glad to be here, and I really enjoyed Brian's article. He paints a good picture of a lot of what goes on up here in the legislature in the final hours. It's madness. I'm just glad I could find a spot. I'm in the Capitol myself right now, and I found a quiet spot to duck into because the halls are filled with largely dark-suited folks, the lobbyists, as they as you keep calling them, registered lobbyists who work a lot of these bills.
You have been up there for a long time. You were on the Assembly staff back in the Willie Brown days. Is it even more crowded in the hallways now than it was then?
It sure seems that way to me. You know, I drive up from Oakland to go to these things now, so I'm a little bit farther removed than I used to be.
You have a great blog today on CaliforniaProgressReport.com. Tell us what happens in the last week of the Assembly and Senate sessions to bills that might have been defeated earlier in the year in committee. Suddenly, you report, they rise from the dead. How does that happen?
Well, they have a procedure. It's called gut and amend, which kind of sounds like evisceration from the Middle Ages. They take bills sometimes, and they will strike the entire bill except for the bill number. It's a bill that's made its way along the process so that it can still be considered under the rules. It has to have made it to a certain stage, and they're called vehicles. And so sometimes even the author's name is stricken and everything else, and then a content of a new bill is put in it that breathes new life into proposals that have been defeated before, or in some cases haven't even seen the light of day before.
And these could
be the form they're proposed in.
These could be bills on subject that the original bill had absolutely nothing to do with at all.
They can be. They're supposed to be germane, but there are ways around these things. And, you know, the reason that all this stuff happens is I think, in part human nature. There's a lot of people that are procrastinators. They wait till the last minute. It's when you can really kind of twist people's arms, and it's do or die for a lot of these bills. And, you know, Brian can point out, others can point out the ones that kind of sound funny. But even some of the ones that sound funny, I think, are very important to the people that are involved and to the situation that that people are in, whether it's kids in a car where smoking's going on or the like. And this is the time that where a lot of serious bills are being passed. I mean, we expect a vote today on Sheila Kuehl's universal health care bill, SB 840. There's a hotly contested bill that the speaker has on cable TV and internet competition from the phone companies that has lots of details. That just got another amendment put in it today. They had another one put in last week, and there's speculation as to whether that'll come up today or not, whether it's really going to be ready. We got the minimum wage bill that's going to pass. So a lot of deals that have been struck. And, of course, this year you have a Republican governor who wants to be able to say he's accomplished some things. And one person up here said it's like Monty Hall, let's make a deal.
Frank Russo, again, publisher of the CaliforniaProgressReport.com. Back to Brian Joseph with the Orange County Register. When a bill is gutted and amended and new language is put in that has nothing to do with the original bill, how difficult is it for you and other reporters to figure out what's going on?
Very difficult to figure out what's going on. This is my first end of session experience, and it's a little mind blowing to see how quickly things move. Someone commented to me earlier today. It's sort of like channel surfing, watching how quick, you know, regularly planned votes come up. When you run into the situation where you're dealing with a gut and amend, and it's a whole new bill that's in there. I mean, basically the only way you can really know what's going on is you have to have your feelers out with several different people and several good sources. In theory, you could be monitoring all the bills online, but when you're 500 of them, it's just too hard to watch how the language changes on each and every one.
Frank Russo, how do the legislators themselves keep track of all of this? Isn't it true that they end up voting for or against bills without really knowing what's in them?
I was just going to say, as us lawyers sometimes call it, you're referring to facts, not in evidence. Sometimes they don't know what they're voting on. They have to rely upon an analysis that's done. There's language that appears on their desks. You see members shouting, "Where's the bill? I can't find it," or "I'm still trying to read it," or whatever, and life goes on. So it is difficult for them to follow it. Now, there are normal procedures where bills go through the more leisurely pace that Brian was talking about at the beginning of the session. They go through committee hearings, people testify, they're vetted. And a lot of the bills that are being put in now in the gut and amends are bills that have gone through that process before, so there's some track history and knowledge about it. But there's a An analysis done by the committee staff, which is Democratic since the legislature is controlled both houses by Democrats, and then there is a Republican analysis that the Republicans use, and you know people kind of rely upon other people to some extent, every once in a while there is a debate on the floor that really is very telling. But I agree with Brian, it's impossible to keep up with what's going on. I keep running back and forth between the Senate and the Assembly, and I have my laptop with all the information that I'm wired in to get there, and sometimes you get information from outside the building that tells you what's going on. Sometimes you have to actually see and hear it yourself. I think something's happening on the flood control bills that got pulled off the table last week, and it seems to me that they're coming back to life. That's one of the exciting tidbits of news that I was able to piece together by watching some of the action earlier today.
Obviously, a lot of attention on those bills as a result of what happened in New Orleans. We've done a lot of programming about the Sacramento Delta and what might happen if too many new developments are built in places where the flood dikes aren't, in fact, holding up. And that was a major piece of legislation, as you said. Maybe it'll revise itself. Just can't help but pointing out that you talk about the Democratic analysis, the Republican analysis. There's also, of course, the official analysis by the legislative analyst. But then there are all those guys in the dark suits and probably women in dark dresses as well. They hear from them, too, right?
Oh, they hear from everybody, as time permits.
Frank,
but, some members have been complaining they can't even get through the crowds in the halls to get to the floor to bring their bills up.
Frank Russo, again, CaliforniaProgress.com, formerly chair of the Alameda County Democratic Party. We need to get a Republican in on this. Dan Schnur is a Republican political strategist, mainly involved in campaigns, I think, but still most knowledgeable about what's going on in Sacramento as a former aide to many people up there. Dan Schnur, always good to have you with us.
Warren, thanks for having me.
You were in the governor's office, Governor Pete Wilson's office, for a while. How does it look from that perspective when all of this is going on?
Well, it looks like the legislative equivalent of kindergartners being let out for recess. Brian made the right point earlier about procrastination, and in the last few days of session, the last couple weeks of session, the flood of legislation is just mind-boggling. I watched Governor Wilson, and I've talked with friends of mine who had similar positions with Governors Duke Majin and Gray Davis and the current governor, and they say that the flood of legislation down to the governor for signature or veto is just borders on the silly. I would say, with only partial tongue-in-cheek, Warren, that a beneficial legislative reform might be limiting each member to 3 bills each session. Let them decide what's most important to them, set their absolute priorities, and make sure that a relatively limited number of pieces of legislation gets the kind of hearing and the kind of debate and the kind of examination that both Frank and Brian correctly pointed out just isn't happening in the closing days of this session or any other.
Certainly governors, though, have to learn the ropes and learn how to work this process. As I understand it, one of the issues with the flood control bill has to do with amendments that the governor wants to make to it. I think there are other bills that he also wants to change. So doesn't the governor's office necessarily end up playing the game?
Necessarily, I think, is the key word there. If the legislation is not being seriously considered until the last week or two of the session, it's relatively difficult to weigh in earlier, although Governors Wilson and to some extent Schwarzenegger occasionally try to. But the end result for both the legislators and the governor, as well as the general public, is twofold. On one hand, you see a lot of legislation that doesn't get the kind of consideration it needs, whether it's Mayor Vito Rigosa's bill on LA Unified. Or if you want to look back into the 1990s, the classic example, of course, is energy deregulation, a very complicated bill getting rushed through at the last minute with no one being able to give it the kind of attention that it deserves. The alternative is very good legislation, such as the redistricting reform being discussed last week, that dies because the clock runs out. And again, there's no way to legislate responsibility or to outlaw procrastination. But on both sides of the aisle, it's not a good way to do the people's business.
Frank Russo, a moment ago you talked about the human nature. What are the chances of the limitation of 3 bills per legislator being enacted?
Slight to none. There used to be no limitation on the number of bills that could be introduced, and now I believe it's 20 bills per legislator or something like that. And, you know, this is a big state. We're larger than most countries. We're one-eighth of the United States. And I think if you end up limiting the number of bills, you'll end up with bills that will be of an omnibus character that will accomplish many different purposes. I think in some ways it's better to have some of the smaller bills that can be looked at separately, and they can be judged, they can be voted on, they can be vetoed by the governor if the governor doesn't like them.
Okay. Once again, though, the process at the moment, at least, is in effect, 500 bills to be considered between now and Thursday. And, it remains to be seen what will come out of that. Dan Walters is a syndicated columnist with the Sacramento Bee. He's been watching the situation in Sacramento for a long, long time. And, Dan, you've just joined us, but we're talking about a process you are well familiar with a lot of people that I'm sure you know. As well, how do you think that the governor's coming out this year in this last-minute crush with the Democratic legislature that he couldn't get along with at all last year and led you and others to write about how dysfunctional Sacramento had become?
Well, I'm not sure that's just exactly what made Sacramento dysfunctional. I think it was dysfunctional long before Arnold Schwarzenegger got here. But nevertheless, he's doing very well this year. I described the other day as a kind of a serendipitous moment. He's ahead in the governor's race, but he's not got it locked up. If he were way ahead, he wouldn't have to do business with the Democrats. If he were way behind, the Democrats wouldn't have to do business with him. But since he's ahead but not got it locked up, he wants to pad his resume. And the Democrats, on the other hand, see that as an opportunity to get him to kind of go their way on some issues that are important to their constituencies. So it is kind of a serendipitous moment, and it's generating a lot of activity in Sacramento. We've already seen, obviously, the infrastructure bonds. God, the list is pretty incredible compared to, given what's happened over the last few years, global warming, which is almost ready to go, telecommunications deregulation, it just goes on and on. Minimum wage, certainly very important to the Democrats. All these things are just percolating along, and there's all sorts of bills coming out, and the governor will be able to spend probably all of September stretching out the signing of these bills with elaborate ceremonies. He'll have a bunch of Democrats standing there by his side as he signs these bills, particularly Fabian Nunez, the Speaker of the Assembly, who's personally carrying the three most important bills in this week, the global warming bill, the Los Angeles Unified School District bill that allowed the mayor to partially take over the district, and the bill that would allow phone companies to get in on the cable television business. And so the governor and the speaker are like joined at the hip these days, and that bodes very well for the governor because it boosts his profile as a centrist bipartisan sort and makes it easier for them to appeal to the more moderate Democrats and the independents and whatnot that he needs to win re-election.
Back to Frank Russo, former Alameda County Democratic Party chair, now writing CaliforniaProgressReport.com. What about Phil Angelides? Are Fabian Nunez and other Democrats depriving him of issues he needs to run against Schwarzenegger?
Oh, I don't think so. I think there'll be plenty to talk about where these ideas came from. Some of them have been bottled up for some time by the governor, and a lot of them are Democratic ideas that he's trying to take credit for. I don't think that's going to be a problem at all. And as Dan said, he wouldn't be dealing with the Democrats if he wasn't in a close race. This is a Democratic state, and a lot of stuff going on there. But, you know, if the politics is what it is, you make the most of it, I think. You want to get some good public policy done, and there'll be some good public policy done by this legislature.
I'll go back to
Dan. Haven't heard anything about prison reform yet, anything being done there in a major way, and that's another shoe that we're waiting to hear drop.
The governor called a special session on that, runs concurrently with the regular session. A lot of money involved in that one as well. Dan Walters, back to you. What about the Villaraigosa bill, bill to give him partial control of the schools in Los Angeles? He, of course, a former assembly speaker himself, certainly knows the ropes up there, and that apparently why he wanted to go there rather than go to the vote of the people. But to what extent has he himself been personally involved in lobbying that bill?
Up to his eyeballs. He's been here frequently. He was here today as the Senate took up the bill and passed the bill. He's been here virtually every week in the last few weeks. negotiating changes in the bill, twisting arms, doing all the things. He and Fabian Nunez are operating a very like a tag team match on legislators in terms of twisting arms and doing deals. And apparently, he's going to get his bill. It's not the bill he wanted originally, but he's going to get his bill. And the governor's already committed to sign it.
Let's take a look at that from a Los Angeles point of view. Rafe Sonnenschein's professor of political science, Cal State Fullerton, author of The City at Stake, Secession, Reform, and the Battle for Los Angeles, was involved in charter reform here in Los Angeles, has written recently in the Los Angeles Times about the mayor's efforts in Sacramento. Rafe Sonnenschein, always good to have you with us.
Thank you, Warren.
Mayors of Los Angeles, generally speaking, have not had a lot of clout statewide.
Oh, no, and the legislature's usually been kind of alien foreign territory for mayors. Usually they go up there and sometimes get their heads handed to them, and especially by speakers and governors and other folks like that who don't always give the city people the respect they'd like to get. This is quite a different ballgame than it's ever been for a mayor.
How does that suggest changes in state politics as a whole?
What I think has happened is the barrier between state and city politics has been torn apart by term limits. And you've now got people taking the elevator back and forth. Now it's hard to tell whether the elevator is going up or down. You know, an L.A. council seat is a very desirable thing now. There's a former speaker of the assembly representing the 10th district.
And that's the second one. Villaraigosa, a former assembly speaker, ran for the council too.
Yeah, and in the old days when this first happened, these folks would come down from the state and get wiped out in city elections until they figured out something about city politics. Now they're going back and forth, and it means that a mayor like Villaraigosa can go up and wheel and deal in Sacramento in ways that I don't think I've ever seen an L.A. mayor do before.
Dan Walders, how does the relationship you mentioned between Mayor Villaraigosa and the Speaker, Fabian Nunez, fit into this term-limited elevator process of going back and forth from one level of government to another?
Well, I think you may very well see, particularly if Phil Angelides loses this year. Well, if Phil Angelides loses this year, you probably will see the mayor being a leading candidate for governor in 2010, and I think there's no doubt that Mr. Nunez would like to become mayor of Los Angeles. So it's you're right. I mean, your previous speaker is right. This term limits creates a kind of a musical chairs situation and does blur the lines between local and state government, and we've never seen a Los Angeles mayor appear as often and working as effectively as we've seen Mr. Villaraigosa the last few weeks.
Dan Schnur is still with us, Republican political strategist. Republicans are, of course, part of the legislature, haven't been in the majority for a very long time. You mentioned, sadly for you, the failure of the bill to change the way in which legislative districts are drawn so the legislature doesn't do it itself. Does the process that we're talking about here make it difficult for Republicans statewide?
Well, it makes it difficult for Republicans statewide, except, of course, for the fact that the governor himself is a Republican. And I think what this, what the dynamic that we've been discussing over the course of this calendar year has allowed Schwarzenegger to do is it's allowed him to reclaim the political center. In the immediate aftermath of last year's special election, not only was the governor thought of rather poorly by the people of California, but they felt that he had, to a large degree, forfeited the reformer and the outsider image that he had cultivated in the recall campaign and during his first year in office, and instead become much more conservative. Frank Russo may be right. There may be voters out there who understand that these bills were sponsored by Democratic legislators who they never heard of. But what they will find out over the course of the campaign and what they have been finding out over the course of the last several months is that Arnold Schwarzenegger, who last November was an evil, angry conservative, is now a much more centrist, much more moderate governor who increases the minimum wage, provides prescription drugs to people in need, and so forth.
Let me go back to
So while the Republican legislators have not played a very large role in this process, it's a process that served the governor particularly well in preparing for his reelection.
Rafe Sonnenschein, let me go back to you. Why do you think it is that Mayor Villaraigosa has not yet endorsed Phil Angelides, the governor of his own party, to be the candidate of his own party to be governor?
Well, he needs the governor's support on school district reform. If the governor were to veto...
I mean, the sitting government, Governor Schwarzenegger.
Right. Well, he needs this governor's support right now to get this school bill through. If Governor Schwarzenegger vetoed this bill, might not be enough votes to override a veto in the legislature. So there's that. But there's also apparently a little bit of leftover concern that Angelides did not support the mayor and his campaign. But I also think this is mainly what you see in a number of big states, which is the big city mayor and the big city governor cross party lines because their political and policy interests converge right around the same time. So it would seem to me that he will endorse. I'm sure he'll endorse Angelides eventually. But this threesome of the speaker, the mayor, and the governor, I think some people are going to get in the history books writing about this one.
Okay. Perhaps you, perhaps Dan Welders, perhaps any of our guests will get into the history books that way. Thanks all of you very much for being with us and help us keep track of what's going on as this process unfolds. Which Way LA, produced tonight by Karen Radziner and Vanessa Romo, technical director Mike Newport. I'm Warman Olney. Join us again for Which Way LA on 89.9 KCRW.
Which Way LA is made possible in part by the Ralph M. Parsons Foundation, the Nathan Cummings Foundation, the Rosalind and Arthur Gilbert Foundation, and the John Randolph Haynes and Dora Haynes Foundation, which supports study and research into policy issues of the Los Angeles region.